The following takes place between 9 a.m. and 10 a.m. Events occur.
Good morning, everyone. It's a new week here at FPC Radio Live. It's the week before the NFL draft. It's Tuesday. It's April the 20th, Mike. April the 20th, a special, special holiday for stoners all across the world out there. if anyone's ever, been alive for the last, however many years, 420, quote unquote, is the unofficial holiday for people who indulge in the, festivities of marijuana and all that. And look, hats off, that's your choice. No one's judging you because of that, because as we know, you're free to do what you want. But stoners out there, rejoice, celebrate your holiday, enjoy it, have fun, be responsible and respectful. I should have probably checked before we went online to make sure that my buddy Mike is still with me. Mike, Are you with us, or are you still a little hungover from your morning session?
No, I am doing okay, my friend. I am with you. The $3 internet in Rhode Island now is worth about 3 cents. You want to talk about your Dogecoins? We talked about this last time we hit the microphone about things going through the roof and all that. Yeah, Rhode Island internet down to about 3 cents, folks. And to tell you the truth, it's actually worth a lot less than that. That will be upgraded very soon, and we will not continue to have these problems. So very, very much glad to be back among the living today, and very much glad to be back with you. And no, I have not indulged in the 420 holiday yet, folks. No, I'm only kidding. No, I have not yet indulged. So I'm ready and roaring to go. The only thing flowing through my system right now is caffeine. So let's hit it, bud.
No, it's funny that the, again, no judgment on whether what you choose to do in your free time. I happen to be of the belief that it is a perfectly normal choice to make. If you want to do that in the privacy of your own home, that's your choice. I'm not judging you because of it. But I always, I kind of think back, 10 years or so, thinking of how big of a day this generally was for people at like college. You know what I mean? Everyone would prepare. I have friends who really indulge themselves. And like, I'm sitting here thinking like, man, this is a pretty big holiday. And it's all based off, the penal code for that in California. And it's just kind of taken off. But as you say, it's also shares the, today, apparently, they're trying to turn it into Doge Day, so we'll see if that happens. But I was actually looking for this, because I use this with our friend Chris Blackie a lot. I wanted to hit this sound effect, but I just couldn't find it. Yeah, there we go. I don't know if they have... it's a flower pot, folks. I think of Grandma's Boy, that movie where they find his bong, and they use it as like a little flowering pot. It's pretty funny, but... Maybe someday I'll tell some more personal stories about my mishaps, but we'll save that for a later day when I'm in a better mood.
Yes, this will be FPC Uncensored.
Yes, that's right.
The sister show to the show that we put out each and every day.
I will tell you the time how I tried to use New Year's as an excuse as to why I looked tired in March. That is for another day. Today. We got a lot to talk about, actually, and
we do.
There's so we weren't on air yesterday, and I did want some. We do try to obviously we talk about sports, but we also try to bring up some pretty important or notable anniversaries of various events or television events or historical events. And yesterday happens. We talk about April 15th as being a pretty significant day when it comes to many different things happening, but. Yesterday was a pretty big day too. Do you know what I'm getting at here? There's a pair of events that are very closely intertwined that was part of my earliest memories as a kid on the news. Big stories, obviously something that if you grew up in the 90s or you're alive during the 90s, you know, and that was first the Waco standoff ending in 1993, mm-hmm. and then obviously 2 years later, the bombing of the Oklahoma City Federal Building Yes, so I knew that was coming up the other day because, again, you and I are both, we appreciate history. So we try to bring it up when we can on the show because, you know, hey, it helps fill time. And again, if we can help educate or at least, I don't want to sound like we're trying to educate. We're not doing that. We're just trying to, you know, bring these topics to focus. But, you and I, you know, obviously relatively close to the same age. So we were both alive during this, you know, I obviously 93, 95, you know, I was still a young kid, but you start to remember things. You know, you remember things from that age. There's certain things that make impressions on you. The election cycle of 93 or 92 into 93 and all that was, you know, something I remember. One of my first experiences, or not my first, but, you know, obviously one that I could actually, like, comprehend to some level, you know, at that age. And then, of course, this whole midnight, all this going on in the mid-90s. But obviously it became back in the news, and I don't know if you know this off the top of your head, and maybe I should have looked it up, but Timothy McVeigh, it wasn't that long ago that he was executed, correct? Like, I'm feeling like, I'm thinking 10 years, was it 10 years ago? I can't even remember now. Now, you know what? I'm going to have to look it up. I'm going to go to my sources, but maybe you can enlighten me before I do that.
Yeah, this wasn't too long ago when he was finally executed for these crimes. I want to say this is maybe within the last 5 years, and I'm probably misremembering.
No,
that,
but... we were both way off. June 11th, 2001.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, okay. So, yeah, we were completely off because we're coming up on, you know.
Pre September 11th. Yeah. I mean, that's, wow. Yeah. We were way, way off. Okay.
Yeah. Look, I mean, okay. I hear it.
Apparently more caffeine is needed. Yes. Folks. I don't mean to make light of the situation, no, obviously, no. But, yeah, it's, this was, yeah, that absolutely surprises me because I felt like it was a lot. I really felt like it wasn't that long ago that he was actually executed for this. I know it took a long time. I know there were a lot of appeals process that were gone through. I mean, obviously the bombing itself taking place in 1995, but I thought more time had passed since then. So yeah, obviously not.
Yeah. Hey, we even learned something. We educated ourselves today. No, you know what it was too. And now that I think about it, there was a documentary. Yeah, that's what I do. I watch documentaries.
It's probably it. Yeah. And it melts together.
Well, there's one I watched within the last few years that really, you know, they did a good job of kind of breaking down the events and kind of reliving the whole thing. And you know, again, it has such a, you know, the entire motivation, or not the entire motivation, but a large part of the motivation behind him doing this stemmed from the Waco incident just a couple years prior. That's why there's no coincidence that they happened on the same day. So, but again, if you're interested in a student of history, this is certainly an event more relevant. And at the time, again, talk about the timeline of events. This was one of the biggest domestic terrorist attacks in United States history. You know, if I'm not mistaken, this the loss of life number was perhaps one of the highest outside of you know, say Pearl Harbor. And again, that's not a domestic terror. Obviously, that was a, you know, Japanese attack. But when it comes to just on, you know, what do they call the lower 48, whatever it is, the actual the bulk of, you know, the land of the United States, I think it was one of the high, like the biggest, obviously to that point, you know, prior to September 11th. So, yeah. You know, the significance of that event at the time was pretty big. And obviously, you know, if you're interested in stuff like that, I highly recommend checking out, documentaries that you can find on that. I have to, I'll have to look up the name of that one I'm referencing, because I saw this a few years ago. And I honestly, we might have actually even talked about it on this show, because we've been doing this show for so long. I probably brought it up when I watched it, because that's just kind of what I do around here. And it was really well done. And again, I'm shocked, really, to say that we're 2 months shy of the 20-year anniversary of his execution. That's wild to me. I thought maybe, like, I don't know. I wasn't even close when I said 10 years.
Yeah, I thought it was in the, no, I was even worse. I said within the last 5, and I thought maybe that was, because I had just, I don't know, for some reason, I had thought that there was a very lengthy appeals process. And obviously, I mean, 1995 to 2001, that's a lengthy process, but I thought it had dragged on a lot longer than that. 168 deaths in the Oklahoma yep. City bombing, 680 injured. You look at the totals there compared to what we were going to experience in September of 2001, and you hate to say it, almost pales in comparison now because we've become so desensitized. Mm-hmm. But I remember that day very vividly. I was a high school student. I was, believe it or not, I was legitimately homesick that day with the flu. And I remember I had been out of school for a couple of days because of the flu. I was still running a little bit of a fever. And I remember seeing that. And I remember, watching it and watching the coverage of when it happened and how it happened and just absorbing the media. That really was one of the more vivid media coverage events that I can remember from my youth. The only thing that came even close to it with being on every channel and really dominating everything that was going on was the O.J. Simpson trial and yeah. all that had happened. But this was different. This was much, much different. This was a live event that had just happened. Multiple casualties, unfortunately, multiple deaths. And it changed the way we looked at things at the time. And little did we know that it was really a precursor to what we were about to experience just 6 short years later. So yesterday, obviously the 19th, and in a lot of ways, what has happened is the Waco standoff has almost become eclipsed by that thought. But that was another horrific event that I can remember playing out, being in elementary school at the time, and hearing about that and the compound and the Davidian compound, David Koresh, and just another very odd story that when you peel the layers back and now you look at it more as an adult, you really realize the severity and the oddities of what went on. As a kid, you think you understand it, but you really don't. And as an adult, you go back and you take a look at these things and you realize just how horrific they really were, especially something like the Davidian compound that I didn't really fully grasp at the time.
Yeah, and that's something, again, I will I'll try to find the name of that documentary, the one that I watched, because it touched on all of that. It was one of those multi-episode ones, so it gives you an opportunity to go beyond just the surface of it, because there are so many deep-seated reasons for why these things happened and how they all came about. So and again, for us, we appreciate history, and we try to, certainly not honor history or this specific event, but honor history in general, because again, we know the saying, like, history is bound to repeat itself if you forget about it. I mean, I'm butchering the saying, but where I'm going here. History repeats itself, obviously, but if you just ignore what happened in the past, then you're more prone to repeat those same mistakes. So, there's another thing I brought up to you. I didn't get a chance to do this yesterday, and I tried, but maybe I had a little bit of your internet last night, but I couldn't stream it because I did miss it live on Sunday, and I didn't get a chance to watch it. So I'm hoping today is going to be a different case. Maybe it'll stream a little bit better. But A&E released a documentary, there's several of these in the works, so this isn't just a one-off thing, but they released a Stone Cold Steve Austin documentary, and from what I've seen, it was fantastic. People loved it, like non-wrestling fans loved it, and I'm chomping at the bit, Mike. Chomping at the bit to watch it today. I really hope I'll be able to sneak it in, or at least it'll stream properly, because I know they put it up last night, but it just wasn't working for me. Every time I tried to get going, it just wouldn't go. So it was very disappointing, because I was hoping to really dive into it today. But did you get a chance to watch it, or are you waiting for a good time to do it? Because I'm excited to see it. I'm excited.
I'm waiting for a good time to do it. Unfortunately, during the draft, it really kind of takes away from your time. My time has been really consumed with just, you know, watching as much footage and watching as many clips as possible on possible draftees and things of that nature. And I really want to enjoy this. It's not something I want to have on in the background. But I'm so curious to see how they did it, because it is getting a lot of critical acclaim, and something that I think is very fitting of Austin himself. You know, just somebody that goes a lot deeper than the character that you saw on the on TV all those years. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you and I both, you know, were such big wrestling fans during the heyday of the Attitude Era in WWE. But I would love to see the background and things that I don't know a ton about his days in WCW, about his days in ECW, and then coming over to WWE, and some of the things that he had to go through in terms of really not finding his niche really until he came to WWE. And even after that, there were, you know, people forget that he started out in WWE as the ringmaster.
Yeah.
Managed by Ted DiBiase, which if he had stuck with that gimmick, I can't imagine him having the career that he had. And basically being told by Eric Bischoff, who's someone that I do hold in high regard, but this one time he was way, way off, where he said that, you know, someone that came in with just, you know, plain black trunks that just did his job with a normal name would never be marketable. And that, to me, was probably one of his biggest regrets. And to Eric's credit, he's gone on record saying that was one time that he was so completely way off, he can't even believe how way off he was on that. But I'm looking forward to this one. This is going to be fun, the whole feud with McMahon, and just getting a chance to relive that. I understand that there is one in the works for Shawn Michaels as well. So that'll be one that I know you're going to want to tune into, especially, my friend.
Yeah, and look, I obviously it's going to be nice to relive some of those old storylines, and of course different matches and all that. Obviously I imagine that the Rock Stone Cold feud is heavily portrayed in this, but it also seems like they're going to take a little bit deeper dive into just the nature of the business, it seems like, you know. And through some of the previews that I saw, it seemed as though, you know, Steve opens up quite a bit, you know, about, you know, his mentality at the time. And, you know, like you said, how, like, on top of the world they seem, but the reality of it is it's not quite that. And, you know, which kind of leads me into something, you know, we weren't on the air the other day, but someone that we've talked about many times on the show just had a birthday. That's Rowdy Roddy Piper. And, you know, he's a guy that you've told the story so many times about how he knew that he wasn't going to live a long life relative to you know, life expectancy. And he almost, you know, he just barely went over his limit he gave himself when he passed. Yeah. And, you know, it's the nature of that business. And if you're fortunate enough to have lived a long life after the fact, then, you know, it's getting to the point now where you have to consider yourself lucky that you did survive that. So
it's true. And it is. It's sad in a lot of respects to think that, you know, to think that you're fortunate. I mean, everybody, you know, agrees that they're fortunate to live a long life, to, you know, to really, you know, live into old age and be able to experience all life cycles. So many don't get the opportunity to do that. Their life is tragically cut short before they have the opportunity to really enjoy it. But with this business, it seems to be more of the norm to expire a lot quicker than, you know, people would in most other walks of life. And it is the nature of that business. You hear a lot of the old guard, and I mean like a lot of like the Ric Flairs of the world, the late great Dusty Rhodes. Roddy Piper has been very, vocal about that. A lot of those guys are not with us anymore, but they were very vocal about the early days of the business and how difficult it was to live through when you were, working for territories, and you had to mm-hmm. be in certain places at certain times. I mean, now these guys, and I'm not lessening the impact of the business folks. I'm not saying that, you know, the guys out there today don't have a tough grind. It's a tough grind no matter what. You're on the road as much as these guys are. You're traveling, you're doing things. It weighs on you, but imagine not being able to get on a jet. I'm not talking about a private jet or a charter jet. I'm talking about just any flight and be able to fly somewhere. You have to be in a certain state at a certain period of time. You're getting in a rental car, or you're getting in a car that you can scrap up from wherever, and that's how you're getting mm-hmm. there. And these guys would drive, they would wrestle all night. You know, they'd give a, you know, 3 or 4 hour blistering show. They'd grab maybe a quick bite to eat if they could afford it.
Yeah.
And then they would drive all night long to get to their next, you know, destination. And there were times where these guys didn't even get a chance to sleep. They would literally get there without much chance. They'd load up on coffee and they would go in and they would wrestle. And then if they had a chance to crash, they would crash. If not, some of these guys were pulling 48 to 72 hour binges where they wouldn't sleep. Mm-hmm. And you can't expect to burn the candle at both ends like that and be able to live a long life, especially with the rigors they're putting their body through. That to me, I think you hit the nail on the head, buddy. That's something I'm looking forward to seeing, because Austin has been one of those guys that lived through that territory mm-hmm. time, but also lived through the time where WWF and WWE wrestlers started to get a little bit more perks. They started to get a little more normalcy. So it'll be interesting to see someone who's lived through both aspects of that be able to really, give his take on it, because his prime was when the WWE was really, really expanding into a galactic world empire. But he lived through the territory days, and he's been very vocal about how that's affected him. So this would be interesting.
Yeah, I remember reading in Mick Foley's book way back in the day. I used to buy all those books. They were great. Mm-hmm. you know, how his experiences, you know, basically, like you said, sleeping in his car, driving from, mm-hmm. you know, to New York, to New Jersey, to Pennsylvania, all over the place. Just, you know, sleeping in cars, sleeping in crappy mm-hmm. cars, too. You know, we're not talking about luxury, because, like, you know, it's you know, the grind that some of these, and we're not even talking about some of the bottom of the barrel, and this isn't meant as an insult, because everyone has to start somewhere. But like the bottom indie shows, I mean, where you're going, and I've had a friend who's gone through it, and it's, you know, he doesn't regret it, but you know, I remember him driving. Well, he got a show in Delaware, and then it's New Jersey, and it's like all the while we're living out in Amherst, Massachusetts, going to college, you know, and it's never for a whole hell of a lot of pay either. Like generally, you'd probably be in the negative, especially because again, you'd be driving all this time. So, right. You know, but again, it's the passion. It wasn't like anyone forced them to do this. I mean, this is what they wanted to do, and that's how you filter it out. I mean, not anyone can just go and do this business. Certainly not then. You'd have to have a lot of, drive to do so. But unfortunately, it led to a lot of early deaths, because, as you said, I mean, it's not just the fighting or the wrestling and the events. It's all the things that come with that lifestyle. So like right. you said, like all of a sudden these guys are getting used to doing these binges where it's like, okay, we're going to wrestle. We're going to do this show, this show, this show. Sometimes you're going to do two shows in one night. You do one promotion and then you drive several hours and go do another one, whatever. Eventually you're like, oh man, I'm a little bit tired. Well, hey, mm-hmm. why don't you try doing this? This will help you. This will give you a kick. You know, we talk about
so
coffee.
Well said.
Yeah. So again, it's just it's a slippery slope. And, you know, unfortunately, we've seen too many of you know, that era of wrestlers go down that path. And look, it doesn't help that, you know, steroids weren't, I mean, again, I'm not giving WWE all the credit in the world for regulating it now, but certainly not then, because it was never even an after. I mean, these guys were, right. you know, juicing like crazy, and that was just the nature of the business. And if you didn't, you kind of fell behind, because well, you had to be talented, but a lot of wrestling is image. A lot of it is image, and kind of what you just said about, you know, Eric Bischoff commenting about Steve Austin and just being this, like, you know, he looks like a guy, like, you start out with create a wrestler, you know what I mean, just generic black trunks, bald head, you know, you fix everything that you want to fix on him, and that's that. But No, I mean, if you didn't have that image, certainly in the 80s and early 90s, where that's what it really was, it was that, you know, does anyone think Hulk Hogan was a great athlete? No. The guy's a lug. I mean, the guy can barely move, even in his best, you know what I mean? But
it's true.
But he had this image, and he obviously was the one of the guys that helped build it. But, you know, he's a terrible-looking athlete. I mean, we think of him in his older age. He wasn't that much better when he was younger. People thought, oh, he can barely lift his leg. Oh, well, he did all right then, but it wasn't, like, anything ridiculous, you know. There was a lot of pomp and circumstance, so.
It really is true. I mean, you talk about image, you talk about, and especially in the 80s, image was everything.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, nowadays, and especially with the Attitude Era and really springing off of that, and a lot of what WCW was doing at the time, too, was highlighting guys that could really maneuver around in the ring. You look at the Eddie Guerreros, the Chris Jerichos, and, you know, Edge, and some of those guys, and really, you know, starting off with some of these guys that could really
real
move.
Quick,
maybe even...
I was going to say, no, that's kind of a great way to say it, because, like, if you're going based on, you know, skill and just ability and just a prowess in the ring, then guys like Eddie Guerrero and, you know, guys like Chris Benoit and, you know, I know he's persona non grata. Those guys would be WWF, WCW champions all the time, but they aren't. And it's,
right.
I mean, it is what it is, but.
No, it's true. I mean, you can even throw Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels in there as being, I think, the first two pioneers for really breaking the mold of this, you know, like He-Man, you know, Masters of the Universe action figure character being the head of your company. I mean, you look at guys like Hogan, maybe Savage to a certain, you know, degree, but it always seemed like Vince was apprehensive to keep the belt on anybody longer, you know, than he needed to get it back on Hogan, whether it be Savage, whether it be Warrior. I mean, these guys all looked very, very similar. Hogan and Warrior, definitely. I mean, these guys look like, you know, chiseled Greek gods out there. But, you know, at the same time, you know, their in-ring ability would never hold a candle to someone like a Kurt Hennig or someone like a Bret Hart or a Shawn Michaels. So that image was what you wanted to do. And I remember, I know I keep coming back to Roddy, but it was Roddy was one of my favorite characters growing up. I just loved the wise-ass nature of the way he did things and the quick wit. And I just, I love the style. I mean, you know, you gotta respect a guy that can be the best heel in the company and then flip over and be one of the more beloved baby faces simply because of his personality. But he was so candid in that interview that he gave with Brian Gumbel on HBO, and he would talk about, like you said, oh, well, I can't sleep. Well, here, take one of these. Oh, I can't go to sleep. Well, here, take one of these. And basically what he said was drugs were basically regulating his entire life. He was taking steroids to beef up, to be bigger, to not look so scrawny in the ring with a guy like Hulk Hogan or Orndorff or all of these guys that were, you know, that were juicing at the time. They, you know, they were, you know, chiseled and, you know, looking good. Roddy didn't want to look diminutive. Roddy was never really like a guy that was known for his physique. He was more known for his wit and his ability to work the microphone. But he was trying to do the best he could with that. And at the same time, he was taking uppers to stay awake. He was taking downers to sleep. And he just, his body couldn't get regulated. He had no normal sleep patterns of his own. His body was sleeping when he told it to by taking a pill. And he was basically keeping it awake by him telling it that, you have to stay awake because I'm going to give you this bill to do it. Such a dangerous and slippery slope.
Mm-hmm. And again, then you add in the whole physical toll of just the wrestling business in general. And yeah, it's scripted. I mean, no one's saying that, but you know, anyone who says it's fake, I think it's a gross misrepresentation of what it is, because there's a very physical, I mean, these guys put themselves through a lot. And again, I mean, we don't, you know, we've gone away from things such as headshots now, but I mean, that was a badge of honor to take a headshot. I mean, you know, shot to the head, and it's like, look, I mean, people would cheer it, and it makes a great pop, but like, and blood gushing out, and that, you know, we're talking more Attitude Era now, but you know, that, you know, those things have long term ramifications too. And like that was just in WWE. I mean, let's not even get into ECW, where it's like, well, you know, they were third tier on a 3-tier wrestling hierarchy, and they had to distinguish themselves. So what do? Well, they take it to the next level. You know, it's crazy. You know, again, you know, when you're passionate about something, and look, I've told you, I've said it on the air before. You know, I did a little bit of training. I knew it wasn't for me for a lot of reasons. I loved every second that I did it. It just, I wasn't able to make the commitment like my friend was. And I realized that and I understood that, but it was a great experience. But it gave me a bigger appreciation to just the physical toll that these guys put themselves through almost on a nightly basis and in some cases twice a night, because like you said, it's like, yeah, when you're doing the indies, you know, you're taking whatever gig you can get, anything you can get. So that sometimes means you're going place to place to place to place to place. And that doesn't really change that much in WWE. I mean, the schedule is a little bit different now with you know, everything being done essentially at one place. But, you know, when you know, you have Raw one night, SmackDown the next, and then Thursday, Friday, you have house shows. I mean, these guys are still doing that stuff and then traveling around. It's like, it's not uncommon for these guys to be on the road for more than 300 days a year, which is absurd when you think about it. Mm-hmm. Absurd. So yeah, I mean, it's you know, we're obviously fans. I know Joel's a big fan. He's always listening and will appreciate this documentary. He may have already actually seen it, so I'm sure he will enjoy it as well. But it's always fascinating to hear about these guys. And like I said, based on the previews and based on, you know, kind of the little tidbits that we've gotten so far, it's going to be a pretty fascinating watch. I'm pretty excited about it. So yeah, I guess we could finally get into some sports news, right?
WWE is considered, it's sort of a pseudo sport. I like to think that we've called
it's a sport. It's a sport. It's a sport. Yeah, trust me. If racing's considered sport, this is a sport. no offense to race car fans out there. I'm just saying, you know, I'm not going to stand for, oh, wrestling's not. No, it's a sport.
Yeah, not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, not that there's anything wrong. Exactly.
You know, we're saying that's a sport, and so is this. That's it. We're not judging. It's just, you know, our world of professional facts.
Yeah, exactly. So, obviously, there is some news. I saw it this morning. Actually, it broke out. Steelers giving Mike Tomlin a 3-year extension. That was pretty. Look, it's the Steelers, so they've had 3 coaches in the last 70 years. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure Mike Tomlin is going to stick around for quite a while. You know, I like Mike Tomlin. I think sometimes I like Mike Tomlin. I'm not going to sit here and bash him. I think he's one of the five best coaches in the league right now. You know, Bill at number one, but then, you know, I consider Tomlin in the mix with like guys like Andy Reid and you know, Pete Carroll even. I begrudgingly throw John Harbaugh in there just because, you know, again, it depends. Like, there's a lot of gaps in coaching ability in this league. You know, from some of the better ones, top echelon, to some of the lower ones, but I would say he's certainly up there in that top five, and certainly been a great coach for the Steelers. So I mean, good for them. And look, they're gearing up to hopefully go on one more run with Ben Roethlisberger. I can't imagine, that he's going to play beyond this year. We just saw Alex Smith announce his retirement, yet another quarterback that is, you know, stepping away. And, you know, good for him, you know, because, again, I think he was somewhat open to maybe coming back this year, but I think, obviously, after what he went through just to get back on the field, at this point in his life, probably, you know, better for him to walk away and not risk any sort of further struggles with that. So
normally retirement announcements are met with bittersweet. Of course, last week we had one in Patriots Nation that made a lot of Patriots fans sad, and naturally, I mean,
well, bittersweet adversity or animosity, exactly. Actually, because when a Patriot retires, you have to go out of your way to tell people why he's not that good. So.
Yeah, and discredit his abilities. Yeah, exactly. But most people with brains or any type of integrity would understand that when a player retires, you celebrate his career. You leave your pop shots and snarky comments until a later date when it's more appropriate to discuss things like that. And even so, you're wrong. But that's okay. okay. You know, I'm not gonna deny that. I'm talking to you, bud. I'm talking to the general you, that malaise population, and everybody knows who I'm talking about there. But whenever you hear about a player retiring, there's some sort of bittersweet feelings. It's usually met with more disappointment and kind of like a sigh. I was actually very relieved to see that Alex Smith announced his retirement yesterday because of everything the man has been through. I mean, you hear about the life-threatening nature of the injury that he had, and him being able to not only step back on a football field, not really being able to step anywhere again after what happened, but step back on a football field and then lead his team to a division title is a truly remarkable thing. And if Alex was going to come back to a team that was either going to struggle or be mid-level or anything to that effect, you can't imagine him trying to put his body through those rigors for something like that. This is a great way for him to go out, considering the injury that he had. He's thinking of his family first, and you have to applaud him for that. So congrats on a great career. I think people will largely forget how good a quarterback Alex Smith was and really could have been if not for the injury. We'll remember the heroism of him being able to get back on the football field, but at the same time, it's smart for him to walk away, and I'm glad to see him walking away while he still can and while he's still healthy. You mentioned Tomlin. I think it's a good move for the Steelers. I know a lot of people like to have mixed feelings on Mike Tomlin, but look, you know, he's been successful in his time there. I mean, it's hard to argue with the resume. Mm-hmm. Been to two Super Bowls, won one, made the playoffs 9 times. They've finished first or second in the AFC North in 12 of the 14 seasons that he's been there. 7 division titles, including the one last year. So you look at that type of resume, it's hard to argue with the success that he's had. And it's easy to see why Pittsburgh would want to keep him around. 3 more years, probably a good move. But I do agree, this is their last shot with Ben, because I don't see him playing beyond this year.
Do you want to hear the potentially the worst take, sports take, or at least in recent memory, and trust me, there's been a lot of them, but this might take the cake here. Do you want to hear it?
I would like to hear this, considering some of the takes that I've heard. If this can top it, I'm curious.
Okay, so this comes from, hold on, I just had it, and silly me, I pressed my notification button, so I lost it on my Twitter account. So, excuse me, no, always be ready to suplex all jabronis. No, that's a great take. That's from the Iron Sheik. That's not what I'm talking about. Ah, here we go. This comes from Rosie DiMino, okay? And I'm not, you know, I'm not in the interest of calling people out specifically, but this warranted it because, again, this take is just, I've read it so many times and I still can't wrap my mind around it. I'm going to read it word for word. She tweets, Milt Dunnell wrote 11,000 columns for the Star. I'll never catch him. But if I were to reach 10,999, I'd stop. There's much to admire about Patrick Marleau as a hockey player and as a human being. Not this. Respect. So, to put some context, if you don't know what this is about, Patrick Marleau yesterday officially passed Gordie Howe with 1,768 games played. Mr. Hockey held that record. Astonishingly, he held the record for most games played since November 26th, 1961. So essentially, what this person is saying, apparently in the business too, we're not just talking about some, you know, random Twitter account with an avatar of a player in his profile picture. We're talking about a professional, quote unquote, and they are suggesting that to respect their elders, he should just stop playing. And to me, I think this is easily, and I've seen some really bad takes. I mean, I deal with Patriots haters all the time on Twitter. It's on nonstop. This is the most horribly terrible. This is just a terrible, terrible take. I mean, I don't know what she was trying to get at. I don't know what kind of point she was trying to prove. But you're telling a professional athlete that it is disrespectful to break another person's record, and you could predictably you could predict the responses to this. I mean, she's getting ripped because of this, and rightfully so. I mean, it's just a, it's a bad take. It's disingenuous because, like,
no,
I
that
mean,
is that is yeah, really bad.
It's terrible. You know,
that is really bad. I mean, coming from someone that is a hockey fan but not a hockey aficionado, or by far not an expert by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah, that's just a, you know, that's just a really bad take. It's.
People like to get up on their high horse for the weirdest things. And again, this just reeks of entitlement and just reeks of just, I think it's disrespectful to say this. I think this is far more disrespectful because you're basically saying that just quit, just stop now. Don't even bother. Yep. And obviously people were out there saying, like, oh, when Alex Ovechkin is one goal away from breaking Gretzky's record, just flip the puck over the ice and just, you know, skate off the ice and just let it be. It's like, no, that's stupid. That's, I mean, again, I try to, you know, I've had some bad takes too myself. It is what it is. But this is just bad. By any angle you look at it, it's a terrible take. It the tweet should have been deleted. The fact that it's even still up is astonishing to me. But
yeah, I mean, I guess at this point, you know, the only thing you can say about that is, you know, maybe give, you know, credit where credit is due to doubling down and not shying away from it. But you got to think that, I mean, somewhere along the line, somebody has, you know, said this is just, this is ridiculous, because that's exactly what it is.
That's how I felt.
You did say that this would take the cake, and I think it has. Although the late great George Carlin would say that takes the cake. Where does it take it?
Yeah, exactly. Well done. So, with that, we will say goodbye because we are running out of time here. So we'll be back tomorrow. We're going to start really diving into some more draft stuff, some more news stuff, and getting ready for next week because it's going to be a lot of fun. So give us a follow on Twitter at FPC Radio Live, at Full Press Radio. I am, of course, at IGLEN31, and follow Mike at MDABATEFPC. Have a great day, folks, and we'll talk to you in the morning.